Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Wednesday morning. It's April 2nd, 17 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City. We've got partly cloudy skies and 19 degrees in the Heber Valley. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Yeah, it's kind of a frigid start out there, especially for the second day of April as we kick off our day. But yes, as you mentioned, at least it's mainly dry across the area. But as we go throughout today, we are not done with the precipitation. In fact, we've got chances for scattered snow showers to redevelop as we go throughout the afternoon. Now, we don't expect widespread steady snow throughout the day, but there will be some passing snow showers from time to time as we go throughout the midday and afternoon hours. Even late this morning, we could see a few snowflakes beginning to redevelop. So just be aware of any time today, we could have a few snowflakes coming down. We're looking at mainly little to no accumulations, especially in the Heber Valley. As you get up towards Park City, could see up to an inch or so. But again, not so much accumulating snow, just scattered snow showers and mood flakes throughout the day. Now, as we go throughout your afternoon, we're looking at highs climbing into the low 40s there in the Heber Valley. We'll see our highs only in the mid 30s there in Park City. As we move into your Thursday, we're going to be looking at more of the same in this unsettled weather pattern. We'll call it partly to mostly cloudy skies. And both in the Heber Valley and in Park City, we'll see another chance of a few scattered snow showers developing out there across the area. Temperatures will start off in the low 20s as we get towards your Thursday morning. We'll see those highs climbing into temperatures up into the lower 40s by the afternoon hours here. And we'll continue with this unsettled weather pattern right into your Friday. So for the rest of this work week, we're expecting basically chances of afternoon scattered snow showers each and every afternoon, Wednesday afternoon, Thursday afternoon, and Friday afternoon. Again, not a ton of accumulation, but at least the chance of snow showers will be there with us. Highs will be in the mid-40s there for Thursday and Friday in the Heber Valley, with highs only in the upper 30s around Park City. Now, we start to see a big pattern change once again as we go towards the weekend. Your Saturday will start off on a frigid note with temperatures down to around 20 in Park City, and temperatures starting off in the upper teens to low 20s in the Heber Valley. As we go throughout the afternoon, though, we're going to see lots of sunshine. That's going to really help to boost those temperatures up into the low 40s for highs on Saturday afternoon in Park City. We're looking at highs in the low 50s in the Heber Valley, but it gets even better. How about your Sunday? We start off with another cold temperature start, with temperatures around 20 to 25 degrees in the morning, but daytime highs on your Sunday in Park City will climb near 50 degrees, and we'll be in the mid to upper 50s in the Heber Valley with lots of sunshine. So a pretty nice weekend heading our way after an unsettled weather pattern for the first few day or last days of the week. And then as we go into next week, it gets even warmer as a ridge of high pressure builds in from the west. So we're looking at highs in the mid 50s climbing into your Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday in the Park City area and the Heber Valley. How about those 60s on the return, especially by next Tuesday and Wednesday? So, yes, we still got a little winter in the next few days, Leslie, but by the weekend and beyond, back to spring.
Okay, it sounded good, Cedric. Thank you.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:09. And with a look in the backcountry, on the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Center, we've got Nikki. Good morning.
Good morning. So yesterday, with all that new snow, we saw a pretty widespread avalanche cycle, primarily across the Salt Lake Erie Mountains, but on the Park City Ridgeline as well. There was multiple human-triggered avalanches, as well as natural avalanches. Most of these failed somewhere within a density change within the recent snow, so not on the new snow-old snow interface, but actually during the storm. And most occurred somewhere between 8 a.m. and noon yesterday, when the precipitation or heavy snowfall was the highest. Today, we've got two main things to think about. The first is going to be that wind-drifted snow. So we have all this new snow available for transport. Overnight gusts picked up to 50, though it's not blowing quite as hard anymore. So we can expect to find soft wind drifts in the mid and upper elevation terrain. As well, we just want to think about the new snow still. So as this drier weather moves in, the new snow should begin to settle. However, temperatures are still cool this morning. So as a result, we could see sloughing or soft slab avalanches within the new snow on all sleep slopes. As well, April, even if the sun comes out for a little bit, it'll rapidly heat the snow, turning the loose avalanches into wet loose avalanches. This is a big concern along mountain roofs and low elevation south facing slopes. So signs of rollerballs, dripping water, or sinking into the soft snow just means it's time to move to higher cold terrain. Today's going to be in moderate avalanche danger on all aspects at mid and upper elevations.
Okay, Nikki, thank you.
Thanks.
Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Stay tuned. In just a minute, I'll be talking with Summit County Community Development Director Peter Barnes with an update on a number of development projects throughout the county. Park City Chamber Bureau Sustainability Director Morgan Mingle in to tell us more about this year's sustainability grant and how to apply. And finally, from the Mountlands Community Housing Trust, Executive Director Jason Glidden in with an update on the HOPA rebuild as well as some other affordable housing issues. Then stay tuned for the Mountain Life. Today's guests include Dr. Candace Hargons, an award-winning psychologist and associate professor at Emory University who explores communication, intimacy, and what makes for good sex. The local author Joel Zuckerman is a gratitude tiger. He'll share how to not only feel gratitude but to express it. All of that coming up on The Mountain Life, happening every Wednesday from 9 to 10. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. On the phone with me now from an update, with an update from the Summit County Planning Office, I have Community Development Director Peter Barnes. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you on this blue sky day?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Peter. Hey, let's start off with just anything that's kind of come through the Planning Office since the last time we talked.
Well, the new ordinary applications that we would like to consider, the, you know, day-to-day, you know, sign permits and plan amendments, nothing new and dramatic there, just, you know, a normal run-of-the-mill. But late afternoon yesterday, Jeff Jones, our Economic Development Director and, you know, Housing Director, came in to reveal the six responses to the RFP on the Klein-Dolly project. So we're very excited by that. If you remember the Klein-Dolly area, that's the area of land south of Jeremy Ranch, between Jeremy Ranch Elementary School and the commercial sector back there. County-owned land, about 30 acres in total of land. Less than half of that is probably in any way developable. You have East Canyon Creek on the steep slopes on the east side. But the western side of the property adjacent to Rasmussen Road, we've been looking at this for a number of years now with the potential of some form of mixed use, possible housing development. Originally, we were looking for a park and ride type scenario there, but not the highest and best use. And last year, if you remember rightly, staff put out some surveys and did some site studies and analysis with the potential for mixed use and residential use primarily. Over on that site, see what we could reasonably put out as an RFP, which the council instructed us to do late last year. And yesterday, Jeff revealed some of the original applications that we have with us. So we're very excited. There's some really good ideas in there. If I mention the fact that up to about 200 residential units, some mixed use, some recreation thoughts, and there's some really good ideas. So we're going to be putting together a selection team and going through those over the next few weeks.
Yeah, what is that process for selection?
Well, that's a good point. Jeff's been running this. The RFP, we're probably going to be putting together some kind of internal review team to make sure that the proposal that we've received, you know, meet the qualifying criteria of the RFP. And then we're probably going to do an analysis. And I probably, if I had my way, although this is entirely Jeff's project in terms of the handling of it, probably do some kind of reveal of all the projects to either the entire council or a subcommittee of the council, how that's going to work, to see what the range of possibilities are. Because in levels of performance criteria, we were looking very much for some ideas, some, you know, minimum solutions to what we were asking for. But then there is a wide variety of good ideas out there, and I think we should take a look at them all in detail before we actually select one or more of those options to go forward with.
Yeah. You've mentioned that there are six of them. Do they all require some kind of public-private partnership, or a developer is free to do it on his or her own?
Literally, I just cracked it open at like 5 o'clock yesterday afternoon. Mm-hmm. I think they all anticipate some kind of participation from the county. Haven't gone into it in any detail. That will be revealed in due course, hopefully over the next few days, definitely in the next few weeks, obviously. There are probably some more well-funded developers in the group than others, but it is county-owned property. So in any event, you know, there is some kind of partnership involved. Will we be selling the property, leasing the property, or sharing in the development costs? I think that will play itself out over the next few weeks. Right. But a lot of opportunity there for us.
Sure. And I guess when does the public get some say into what's happening?
Hopefully soon. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we weren't due to actually go through the process, complete this first start of the first part of the selection process, probably for about another month. But, you know, we, you know, closed the applications last week, just been assembling the information. There's a lot of information in each of the applications, putting together some booklets and presentation. And I would like to think we can get some of the ideas revealed pretty quickly. But, you know, we're going to go through the internal, like, selection shortlist type process, and hopefully it's going to be up to council. Jeff's project is going to be running the RFP process. But hopefully we're going to get out there in front of the public as quickly as possible.
All right. Moving on, any update on Dakota Pacific, right? I mean, we have heard that apparently the developer has reached out to the planning department, I think specifically to talk about Senate Bill 26, which basically requires, basically allows the developer to move forward with this?
That's kind of our understanding. We're all playing this by ear. What we have in the planning department essentially is, what do we do next? Under the original signed development agreement that, you know, it's been challenged by the referendum, there was a sequence of processes laid out, applications, what happens next with each particular piece of the project. The SB 26, which was, is actually part of the, there's a section within that Senate bill that was recently passed regarding the implications of tax financing for what we call a housing and transit reinvestment zone. And this is a follow-on from the probably the debacle we had a couple of years ago about, you know, the are the state forcing a solution upon us? Well, this is more along the lines of recognizing what the agreement would, you know, what agreement was reached between the council and Dakota Pacific towards the end of last year, and establishing a process which currently doesn't exist within the planning department application processes and codes. So purely from an administration perspective, Dakota Pacific were reaching out to say, if we go that route as opposed to, you know, the referendum result one way or another, whatever happens, if they go the SB 26 route, what happens next? So we're kind of feeling this out together. We've talked internally about how we would handle a, an application process. We were reaching out to the legal department to talk about, you know, the best way of processing something. Literally, it's just the administrative processing side of it that caught us a little bit off guard, where the state are saying you need to go through an administrative approval process, whereas the development agreement, essential rezone that was done last year, was a legislative approval process. All very geeky in terms of language, technical, with different kinds of results. But at the end of the day, when an application form comes through my office, I need to know what to do with it and do it as efficiently as possible. So that's what we're actually talking about right now.
Yeah. Now, a lawsuit was put on between Summit County and Dakota Pacific, was put on hold to renegotiate this development parcel. So what happens to that?
I'm hoping that if everyone, you know, we've all been, shall we say, sitting around the table talking to each other. I'd rather talk to each other than sue each other. That was actually put on hold towards the end of last year. The development agreement assumes that the last version of the development agreement the county council signed, that should that actually be completed and go forward in that basis, then the lawsuit would disappear. I don't know what would happen now if the referendum went through, or there were some obstacles placed in front through this SB 26. I can't imagine that anybody actually gives up entirely on their options for any kind of, you know, legal satisfaction. But from the planning department's perspective, we're just moving through as if, shall we say, we're all friends together. No one's going to sue each other, but everyone is going to retain their legal rights.
All right, moving on, we've reported that a portion of the Cedar Crest development's annexation request is back before the city of Colville. What does that mean now for the rest of the project?
Interesting question. I mean, we've talked on and off over the last few months, you know, where is Cedar Crest, and We've kind of said we don't know either. Obviously, they've been talking to Colville, and they formally put in an annexation request a couple of weeks ago that takes somewhere between 300 and 350 acres of the original 1,000 acres of land out of what we call a village overlay zone to annex into the city of Colville. That portion of land, if anyone is familiar with Colville, the southern, there's like a peninsula of Colville that drops to the south, following the 80 corridor. That's known as the Red Hills development. That's actually, I believe it's owned, if not operated and financed by Ivory Homes, who have an interest in the Cedar Crest development. The portion of land from the village overlay that they've asked to annex into Colville is essentially adjacent to that project. I don't know their motives, because we haven't spoken directly about it, but I would suggest that the combination of the Red Hills and the Cedar Crest portion of the land that we were actually looking at is a way to consolidate some of the infrastructure in that area, and that's going to be up to the city of Colville what they do with that. We're very interested, obviously, in following it. What it does to what's left in the county is that by the nature of the village overlay zone process and approval, there's now a change to the overall boundary of the village overlay zone project that we were looking at. And because of the size and nature of that change, we would actually have to go back to the county council to see if they would approve the continuation of the village overlay zone as applied for, how it needs to be changed. So there will be some processing in the county either way, whether the village overlay zone goes away or is modified. Whatever happens in Colville, because there's a movement of this area of land or potential movement of this area of land, it will have an impact on what we are doing.
That's interesting, though, that they only brought a third of all of the acreage to Colville. So still two-thirds remains in unincorporated Summit County, huh?
Exactly. And obviously, if you take a development project and you take a third of it and remove it completely, what happens to the remainder of the project? Is it still viable? It's likely that there's probably a project to be had there, but it will not be the same project. So we do need to sit around the table and find out, you know, what their intentions are. But it's currently being driven by what they're proposing to Colville. We will be following it, but we have no direct influence in it.
All right. Any news with regard to the West Hills incorporation process?
I'll keep saying this. It's all a mystery to me too. That's kind of fatuous. I didn't mean to say that. It's because it's not a county jurisdiction process. Now, you know, it's in the hands of the state. It's that, you know, the whole idea of incorporation, it's removed from us. It's in the lieutenant governor's hands. There will be a vote of those people within the boundaries of that proposed incorporation. We are watching it closely. My personal opinion is not a secret. My official position is I have no position.
Okay. What's the status of the Junction Commons application, again, formerly known as the Outlets?
Moving ahead, enthusiastically from the applicant's perspective, we had another fairly comprehensive work session in front of the Planning Commission last week. We were looking primarily at traffic, transportation, circulation, pedestrian circulation, bike trails, transit, etc., and how a project of this size and nature in that area would impact local traffic. It was a well-received meeting, I think. Obviously, the numbers, the absolute details are not there, but we are talking a significant number of cars, parking spaces, changes to uses of significant amount and style and type. The exercise that we were going through was how the mix of uses around the new outlet mall would actually change the pattern rather than increase it, and more likely decrease traffic impacts because of what is actually being proposed in the area. So a very important discussion still at the work session level. We're hoping to bring this to public hearings actually in the fairly near future.
So what was the number of units that they're hoping to get?
The in terms of residential units, they're talking about removing, you know, like, 80,000 square feet of commercial in the upper area of the outlet mall, if people are familiar with the two loops, the lower loop and the upper loop, and replacing it with something of the order of 400, 430 residential units. Different mix of types, but they'll also be providing structured parking, replacement parking, complicated sequence of phasing, because we have an existing commercial operation and it's going to remain operating while a project of any kind is actually, you know, processed and progresses through that area. So it's a technically a very involved piece of work, you know, ambitious and very interesting, but it's a lot of units, 400 odd units, 1600, 1800 parking spaces of various forms, couple of structured parking spaces, different types of residential units, significant number of affordable units, some apartments, some tall project, and some townhomes. Very interesting. If anybody wants to follow through, more than happy to share what we have in the planning department if anyone wants to come in and take a look. But be on the lookout for future public hearings, and please feel welcome to join any of the future work sessions that we have.
Okay. A lot of folks were very excited about a formal proposal there that would have brought a Harmon's to the outlet mall there. They've just disappeared then. Harmon's is...
Harmon's, yes, they essentially disappeared. If you think about the idea of a 40 to 60,000 square foot grocery store, as exciting as it appeals, there is a significant amount of slope across the outlet mall site. You know, it's maybe not noticeable when you're not really paying attention to it, and compared to the mountains, it's not a lot of, it doesn't feel like a lot of slope compared to what we do. But if you put a flat slab 60,000 square foot building across a significant slope, it involves massive amounts of grading and fill. The alternative, of course, is to have steps in the slab, which is not conducive to wheeling your shopping trolley around a grocery store. So the end of the day, I think that the amount of money, to be blunt, in terms of the enabling works to actually make it possible, then probably just push them away.
Okay. And anything finally from Henry Sagan, his property off of US 40? I mean, we had gone through kind of a new zone creation here with this mixed use, but really haven't seen anything since.
Yeah, I think with Henry and his financial partners have been cooling on that for some time. I think maybe, I don't know for a fact, but I think maybe some of the investors are, you know, started to back away from it as things were taking their time, not moving so quickly. We have had an inquiry from Henry and his partner Steve Coleman regarding the potential for just perhaps subdividing the larger portion, the 15-acre portion of their land, and just selling smaller portions off to other developers. Not as satisfying as us, but if you know, it's within their rights and abilities, so they're more than happy to apply for that. But we're still discussing it. Another impact is that we are actually looking to do more road improvements in that area, including a roundabout at the end of the Promontory Drive, and that might impact some of the land uses over there too. So we're actually having those conversations, as soon as tomorrow, I believe.
Okay. Anything else, Peter, you wanted to mention?
Nothing dramatic. I'm still, you know, as excited as an English can be about the RFP for Klein Dolly. Looking forward to sharing that with the public as soon as we can.
Okay. Peter Barnes, Summit County Community Development Director. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Leslie. Bye.
Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, applications for the annual Sustainable Tourism Grant are open, and in the studio to tell us what these are and how much money is available, I have Morgan Mingle. She's Director of the Sustainable Tourism for the Park City Chamber and Visitors Bureau. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
So again, tell us, give us some background here. The grant is what?
Yes, this is a grant program that we're always really excited to be able to run. It really directly helps support our sustainable tourism plan, which is that 10-year long-range strategic plan for Park City as a destination. And the hope for the Sustainable Tourism Grant is to help fund and support programs and projects that directly support the sustainable tourism plan. And we know that there's so much good work and wonderful organizations and people in the community that really are best served to do a lot of the work and execution of that plan. And so this is our way of putting support and money directly in the hands of people that are best served to do that work.
Yeah, how much money do you have?
So they are able to request up to $30,000. And the total amount of funding is going to be completely based on the quality of the applications.
Right. And I think this is the third year you've done this?
It's the third year.
Yeah. So tell us about the other two, you know, that have happened before this.
Yeah, we've been really pleased with the response. We know, you know, when it's a relatively new grant program, it takes a while to get the word out there. And from year one, we've had great response from different nonprofits and other local organizations and businesses. And we've funded some really cool programs, so I'm happy to share some of those if you'd like.
Yeah.
So some that we're really pleased with are some work to refine the parkcitytrails.org website, which if any of the listeners haven't been to that website, it's an incredible resource to seeing current trail conditions, winter grooming. You get a heads up if there's any mud on the trails. And all of our trail managers feed directly into that system. And we've also helped support expanding the trailhead camera network that also lives on that website, as well as some additional signs. We were able to support inputting a permanent exhibit in the historic Echo Church. We supported a lodging refillable toiletries pilot project. We've helped support Summit Arts Market and stabilizing the Silver King headframe. So there's a lot of diversity in what we can support. And we really want to make sure that we are bringing balance across environment, social needs, and making sure that we have a thriving tourism economy. And so we're really looking holistically at the type of projects that we're wanting to fund.
Yeah, so it's not just one big $30,000 project. You break it up, but depending on what you get.
No, we break it up. And sometimes it's appropriate for someone to receive as little as $5,000, depending on the project, and they really just want a little bit of extra support to see something across the finish line. All the way up to, if $30,000 isn't enough for a complete project, we're happy to partially fund as well if people are looking at other funding sources.
All right, and then this money's coming from what, just the budget?
It's coming from our budget. We have some diverse funding sources, so we're really happy to support a breadth and depth of projects. Really, our biggest priority is making sure that we are increasing the visibility and reputation of Park City as a sustainable destination so we can continue to attract those responsible visitors. And we really just want to celebrate the breadth and depth of our local history, thriving arts and culture scene, so that visitors can really engage with who Park City truly is.
Okay, talk a little bit about just the boundaries of the grant. I mean, who can, who can't, yeah, and what they need to do.
Yeah, so the boundaries for the grant are, you have to be located in Summit County, good standing at the chamber. And we can support any nonprofit, local business, local organization. And government entities can apply, but only in collaboration with other partners.
Okay. And they have to have this grant to you by when?
The deadline is going to be Friday, May 2nd. And to find out more information on all of the grant terms, you go to parkcitychamber.com/stgrant.
All right. And then I understand that it is not to be used for employee salaries.
Correct.
All right. Yeah. But they can hire folks to help them with the project?
Absolutely. So if the project is hiring a consultant to create a strategic plan or a communications plan, that is completely appropriate. We just don't want to be funding year-over-year salaries.
Okay. And then who's judging the applications?
We're going to be selecting a cohort of folks to go through applications, and they're all going to be scored based on a standardized rubric. So everyone will get really standardized feedback on their application. And once that committee ranks applications, it will go to final approval through our chamber board.
Okay. When can people have money in hand?
It will be early July that folks are notified and can actually start using those funds.
Okay. Anything else you want to talk about the grant before we move on?
I think we've covered it.
Okay. In other news, Park City's Mountain Kind rebrand won first place in the business and marketing category at the 2025 Green Destinations Top 100 Story Awards. What do the judges have to say about the rebrand? Any idea?
Yeah, so this is a program that Green Destinations does every year. And so their hope is to collect a ton of best practices from destinations around the world, which is why it's called the Top 100 Stories Competition, because they're really wanting a lot of inspiration from a lot of places. And they were really impressed with the Mountain Kind rebrand and how it identifies Park City as a destination that cares about its community, cares about its resources, and really invites visitors into that whenever they come to Park City. So yeah, we're really pleased that we got first place in that business and marketing category. And it's really nice to get that outside validation. I know that we love the Mountain Kind rebrand and we were really proud of rolling that out in the community. But having that validation in this international competition was really, really cool.
All right. And I noticed, you know, I mean, we see it on the buses. And I see people wearing kind of Mountain Kind gear. Is that like for sale in some of your visitor centers?
It's something that we're considering developing, but that's something that's going to be rolled out in the future if we decide to do that.
Okay. Let's say the Chamber's also offering the new Green Event Toolkit. Tell me, what is this?
Yeah, so we created this toolkit in conjunction with a workshop that we did with local event and meeting planners. And our hope is just to really kind of cut through some of the noise when it comes to making sustainability tweaks in a lot of different areas. And so for meeting planners, we wanted to focus on creating some really streamlined resources for folks that might be putting on a small to a medium-sized event. So imagine up to the size of a ballroom. And what we ended up developing were three different assets. So one of those is a more in-depth guide. It's about 20, 30 pages with a lot of information and resources. But on top of that, we also created a little cheat sheet so that if you, like me, just like having one thing up on a board that you can just glance up at, that's available as well as a one-page checklist so that if someone is actually executing a meeting or event, they can look at this quick checklist and say, okay, I could do this, this, and this. This doesn't necessarily apply to me, but maybe I should consider it for the future. So our hope is that folks will be able to lean on these resources just to know, like, what are the quick, easy wins and what are the most impactful actions that you can focus on when you're developing a meeting or an event. And you don't really have to pay attention to the other stuff.
Yeah. So how do people get one? I mean, you have to be members?
No, it's actually just posted on our website.
Okay.
So if you go to visit parkcity.com/meetings under the resources page, there is an area that's sustainable meetings, and you'll see all three of those resources listed there.
Okay. And of course, we've got next month the Wasatch Back Economic Day coming up. Is sustainability going to be part of that? And any of the topics so far that you've...
Yeah, the team is working on just fine-tuning what is going to be on the agenda for the Wasatch Back Economic Summit. I know of a couple of different areas where they're going to be looking at really the interaction between economics and sustainability. But if folks want to see that agenda and learn more, they can go to our website. And I'm not sure of actually the date that registration opens for that, but I feel like it's soon.
Coming soon.
And we can get that for you.
Yeah. All right. And what else is keeping you busy?
Oh, gosh. What else is keeping me busy? So lots of stuff in development. We are working on expanding some of those kind of industry resources and toolkits, much like the Sustainable Meetings and Events program, to look at maybe larger events. So we're working in collaboration with folks over at Deer Valley to pilot a zero waste program for events. And we're looking forward to that, finishing its development and getting rolled out into the community. We're also in the middle of working on our one-year audit for our Mountain Ideal Destination Certification.
And what's that?
So if you'll recall, we worked on getting a Sustainable Destination Certification through a program called Mountain Ideal. And that is something that's validated by the Global Sustainable Tourism Council. And we finally received our certification last summer. It was a huge lift. We were able to pull together a lot of really impressive resources from across Summit County on the work that we're doing to support a sustainable destination. And as part of that certification, you have to go through a recertification and a re-audit process. And so a lot of what we're doing is checking in on community collaborators, partners, folks really doing the work on the ground, and getting updates on the good work that folks are doing and everything from energy and water conservation all the way to celebrating our early mining history, to supporting local makers and artists. So much like the Sustainable Tourism Grant, the certification program is really holistic and looking full circle. So I've been enjoying going back and getting updates from a lot of community partners to be able to work on that audit.
Okay. All right. Morgan, anything else you want to mention?
I don't think so.
Okay. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Morgan Mingle, again, is the Director of Sustainability for Park City Chamber of Commerce and Visitors Bureau. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. We've got 19 degrees here in Old Town Park City. National Weather Service today is calling for a bit of sunshine, but you can expect another snow shower later today. 40% chance, in fact. Expected high only 36. 19 is our overnight low. Tomorrow, we've got a bit of sunshine with also another round of some snow showers moving in afternoon. Expected high 38. 41 on Friday again with same deal. A little bit of sunshine maybe in the morning with some showers in the afternoon. But by Saturday, we're back to high pressure and rebuilding temperatures. 43 and sunshine on Saturday. 49 on Sunday. And just very similar in the Heber Valley. Today's high 42. Tomorrow 46, 47 on Friday before things clear up. Back into the low 50s by Saturday, upper 50s by Sunday. In the studio now with an update from Mountainlands Community Housing Trust, I have Executive Director Jason Glidden. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning.
Let's start by getting an update on HOPA. This is the Holiday Village Parkside apartment development there at Monitor and Kearns Boulevard.
Yeah, right. Located right next to the high school. You know, last year we were a little disappointed. We did not receive the LIHTC funding we were hoping to receive. We fell just short. We had a really strong application. We actually fell about 10 points short, which is really close. So what we've been doing is refining our project a little bit and to increase our scoring. So we feel that we have actually a better application being submitted this year. Applications will be submitted at the end of April, and we should find out in June if we are selected.
Okay, so LIHTC funding is low income
tax credits. Yes, sorry. Yeah, so and that's through the federal government, and there's an allocation to each state based on population. The state uses Utah Housing Corporation as an organization that distributes those funds, and it's done through an application process, and there's a scoring sheet that they score the applications on. And each year they refine that a little bit and make some changes to that. And so you've got to kind of watch it and see, and then you've got to kind of play the game a little bit and see, you know, which are there changes that we need to make to the project to make it a more competitive project. So that's what we've been working on since probably December. They officially didn't come out with the actual scoring sheet until the end of January, but we had a good idea. They do take input from developers. You know, and I think one of the things is, you know, it's oversubscribed. I mean, at least for the 4%, where, you know, they had about $10 million in tax credits. Now that's spread out over 10 years, so it's about $100 million for projects. But they had $40 million in requests, you know, so it was 4x, you know, oversubscribed. So it's a very competitive process. And so, you know, for us, we felt really great that, you know, while we didn't get funded, you know, we were very, very close. We were second. So we were right there. So, again, we're very optimistic for this year.
Yeah. How much are you looking for?
So they do. The other thing is that, you know, obviously, as construction costs have gone up, it's become more expensive. And so actually, you know, the efficiency of the tax credits they've looked at, you know, and they're not producing as many units with the same amount of money they had. So they've made some changes to try to increase that efficiency. So, you know, for us, you know, we probably are looking right around, you know, the $2 million mark.
Yeah. And again, with so many cuts happening at the federal level, Is this a for sure thing?
For now, it is, absolutely. We've not seen anything that has told us otherwise. You know, we obviously have, with the federal government, we have to keep an eye on a couple things. One is obviously low-income tax credits. The other is that we've got three properties that have rural rental assurance. Rental assistance from rural development. So those are things we are keeping an eye on. Everything that has been told to us is that everything is still funded moving forward. We also have our self-help program that we utilize, and that's through rural development. And we got word that they funded again at the same level as they funded last year. So we're excited about that. At least there was no cuts. So, you know, we have a group currently going right now in Heber that's building 6 townhomes. And should be finished up with them in probably around July. And we're getting ready to close on our next group, which will start construction They'll be on site probably around August, but we'll start construction probably in May for another 6 townhomes. So the self-help program is still moving forward. And, you know, we're always looking for new applicants. So if someone's interested, they should definitely reach out to us.
Yeah. And when you mentioned refining the HOPA project, how so?
It's small tweaks for the most part. But, you know, you look at things like the number of one bedrooms and do we adjust like the unit types. So what we did was take away some of the one bedrooms and made larger units. So we made two and three bedroom units. So that's just one example of something that we would change. And we're looking again, you know, the criteria really focusing on some of that cost efficiency. You know, they look at, you know, the cost per unit, and they also look at the cost per bedroom. So it actually can be advantageous to increase the number of bedrooms that you have, in the project.
Hmm. And I'm sure you've thought about it, but as we roll out what, you know, Freedom Day is today, what does that mean in terms of construction and tariffs?
Yeah. Again, that's another thing we really keep a close eye on, especially with our self-help, because we have to project that budget out so far in advance. And these folks, you know, are getting loans for that amount. And so, you know, our construction supervisors keep close tabs on where stuff's coming from. And talk to our vendors quite a bit to try to stay ahead of that. We try to make, you know, plan Bs in a sense of if we see this, what are we going to do? You know, so, but it is difficult.
Yeah. And do you have final approvals for through Park City Municipal?
We do. Yes. Yeah. Yep. We did receive those. Our development agreement, you know, there is a date that we need to start construction by. We still have, I believe, until next August to do that before we'd have to ask for an extension on that.
Yeah. And the fact that some refinements may be made, does that mean it has to go back through, or you're okay?
So I think we're okay. I've talked a little bit with planning about it, you know, because the overall project hasn't changed and the number of units that we're going to be developing for the overall project hasn't changed. So, you know, we feel pretty comfortable that these are insignificant changes that we're making.
Yeah. And then, so is it just this one-time LIHTC funding that you need, or is this something that you're going to have, you can count on year after year?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to need it for each phase. Right now we're in phase one. We're scheduled to probably do, you know, four or five phases. So it's really the first three that are really key for us, because once we get through the third phase, we'll be able to move all the existing residents into the new buildings. And at that point, we might be able to reconsider other financing options.
Yeah. And is that part of your application that you receive funding for three phases?
No. You have to go one by one.
Yeah. So what happens if you don't get it?
Well, I think one of the things that is that there is some additional points for rehab. And so while we won't get it on this one necessarily, because we're not, we're building on a surface lot for phase one. Once we move into phases two and three and moving on from there, well, actually, because we are rehabbing or replacing existing, that we actually will get a bump there. So it actually would be advantageous to us.
So assuming all goes well, how long of a construction project are we talking about?
I'm hesitant to say. I mean, obviously, it's really dependent on, you know, funding and everything like that. But, you know, it's going to be several years.
All right. And you also mentioned, again, you're still working with the self-help housing. What other projects do you have out there? These are the two big ones, huh?
Those are the two big ones right now. Parkview Place is, you know, 49 units or lots, rather, that we bought down in Heber, a subdivision we bought down in Heber. We've been working on that one for about 5 years now. It slowed down because of COVID, and now it's picking back up again. We do the self-help program there, and then we're also breaking ground in August on 6 townhomes that we're partnering with Utah Housing Corporation on as part of their Crown program, which is a rent-to-own program. So, folks that qualify, and I think they qualify at 60% of the area median income, will rent at an affordable rate over 15 years. And after the 15 years, they'll have the ability to purchase the home at a very discounted rate, and then they'll have automatic equity built into the unit when they purchase it. So, we have some homes that we help manage with Wasatch County Housing Authority that are just coming out of that 15-year compliance in Wasatch, and the homes were offered to the homeowners at $150,000. So it's a very significant discount on the homes.
Yeah, so these 6 townhomes are where?
In Parkview Place as well, in Heber.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Got it. All right. So now with both Park City and Summit County kind of taking on building affordable units, we see a lot of public-private partnerships. Is Mountain Land still relevant? Or are you one of those people, you know, partners?
Absolutely. That's what I would say. Yeah. You know, it's not the, I think the county and the city are looking at opportunities for these public-private partnerships, which means they're not necessarily developing. They're partnering with a developer. Mountain Lands is a developer. So we have every opportunity to respond to RFPs that come out looking for these developers. And we evaluate those and decide whether or not it's a feasible project for us to partner with.
Did you throw your hat in the ring for the Klein Dolly?
We did.
Okay, so
yes.
That's one of the six then.
Yes.
Yeah. What were you? Can you talk about what you were proposing, or?
You know, it's pretty complex. We have several partners that we've gone in with, so you know, we're excited that, you know, we proposed something I think that you know, provides quite a bit of both rental and ownership opportunities. It's you know, not necessarily LIHTC. We actually tried to stay away from that, and you know. We have, you know, I'd be hesitant to go on too much right now until we go through the evaluation process.
Okay. And I guess what is the Mountain Land's kind of role in the community? I mean, is it the builder of affordable housing, the manager of affordable units? I mean,
I like to say is that, you know, Mountain Lands is works to provide housing opportunities in the Wasatch Back. And there's a number of different ways we do that. Obviously, we are, I would say, first and foremost, a developer of affordable housing. I mean, that's what we've been doing for, you know, a long time. We've built more affordable housing, I think, in the Wasatch Back than any other organization, you know. So we'll continue to do that. In addition to that, you know, the Housing Resource Center is an amazing resource, which we are, in a sense, a one-stop shop for anybody in the community to come in who's looking for housing. And, you know, we've been extremely successful in helping folks get, you know, on the Park City wait list. I think we've driven almost half of that list to them because of the people that come in and look for help from us. In addition to that, I think last year we helped over 30 families get into rental housing. So, and I think, you know, what other people might not know is that we're also contracted with Wasatch and Summit County. We do all of their compliance. We do all the resales of affordable housing that are not within city limits of Park City. So I think last year there was 11 resales in Summit County. And I think to date, I think we've done 5 already this year. So it's a busy process. And we stay busy doing a lot of that. So, you know, I think as being a resource, and the last thing obviously is advocating for good housing policy, right? And so we'll continue to work on that and work with our local jurisdictions to try to help to promote more affordable housing in the area.
Yeah. So those for sale units, when they come up, how are those publicized?
Yeah. So it's in the Summit in Wasatch County. It's you know, we do have an interest list that we can put it out to. We are looking and are in the process right now of working towards something very similar to what Park City has done with creating a wait list, where there'd be an application, a pre-application, which would be fairly simple to get you onto the list. It just, I think, adds a little bit of equity to the process. It takes away some of the, you know, who you know kind of aspects of it. So most of the deed restrictions are written that the county or the housing authority in Wasatch has first right of refusal, and they can, you know, transfer that right. And so we'll be utilizing that to use the wait list a little bit more effectively.
Okay, and you mentioned the Housing Resource Center. Megan McKenna was serving as your advocate. Are you replacing that position, or?
Yeah, so, you know, what obviously when you have a position leaving, it's a time to kind of reevaluate and see where resources were needed. Angelica Espinoza, you know, obviously is a housing coordinator who's been extremely busy. She helps about 16 families a day. And so we felt that we really needed to provide some more resources in that area. So we did hire a new position. It's the housing administrative coordinator, but they work with Angelica. We hired Meredith Mortimer, and she is bilingual, which was a key component to what we were looking for. But she assists Angelica and helps people as they come in and gets them, you know, the assistance that they need. So as far as the advocate part of it, that, you know, was a large part of Megan's role, you know, I've kind of taken a lot of that on. I'm already attending a lot of the public meetings, whether that be Planning Commission or the councils and everything like that, going out and speaking with groups. You know, I spoke to the Planning Lab the other night. So I've taken on a lot of that role for right now. And, you know, if we can continue to grow, we'll reevaluate where those resources need to go.
Okay. Jason, anything else you want to mention?
Just really quick, we do have some housing how-tos coming up that I wanted to reach out or make sure everybody knew. In Park City on April 14th, Monday, April 14th at the Park City Library. There will be another one coming in July. And then in Heber City at the Heber Library, we are May 14th. And that's from 6 to 7:30. And the ones in Park City, are from 6 to 7. These will be in both English and Spanish. So, but folks can go on our website and get more information.
Okay. Jason Glidden, thank you.
Thank you.
Jason Glidden is the Executive Director of the Mountainlands Community Housing Trust. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.